Hey, what's up, Cub fans? Welcome to episode 133 of Locked On Cubs, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Ryan Davis here with Sean Sears. As always, we're going to be talking a little bit about the Cubs' victories over the weekend and four-game sweep of the Cincinnati Reds. Talk about one pitcher in particular who had a great game. Then later we actually will talk about some pitching prospects of the Cubs, and we'll give you a few injury updates before going around the NL Central and looking at what's happened in the last few days for the other teams. But before that, how's it going?
It's going good. It was a nice weekend. Of course, the Cubs swept the Reds, so that's always awesome. But it was just a nice weekend. It was a little hot, but I was okay with it.
Yeah, it was hot. So runs scoring, which is something that they hadn't been doing for a while. I took a note down here that says the Cubs scored as many runs in their four games against the Reds as they did in a 12-game stretch from August 7th through August 21st. So there you have it.
Yeah, that's extremely telling of how well the offense has just all of a sudden turned on. So hopefully this isn't just a case of playing a Reds team that is kind of probably done with 2018. This is the Cub team we're going to get for the rest of the season. But regardless, it's very encouraging to see them play this well for four straight games.
Yeah, well, and you would hope that the Reds might bounce back a little bit from this because they go home now to face the Milwaukee Brewers for three. So maybe they'll kick themselves together on their off day today and really go at it tomorrow.
I wouldn't be upset about that.
So the Cubs got solid pitching performances all weekend. That includes a complete game from Cole Hamels, a surprisingly good start from Alec Mills that we'll talk about in a minute, seven shutout innings from Kyle Hendricks. On Sunday, Hendricks was just absolutely on his game. And then over his last 10 starts, which basically takes us back to when Hendricks was talking about making that mechanical change on the mound with where his positioning over the rubber. Over his last 10 starts, 61 and two-thirds innings, 59 strikeouts, only 8 walks, 4 home runs allowed, 3.21 ERA. So very good. David Bode hit another home run on Sunday, his 6th. Kyle Schwarber hit his 24th. Jason Hayward was 4-for-4 with 3 singles and a triple. And Randy Rosario pitched the final innings to record a 9-0 win.
Wow. You would have told me that this stuff was going to be happening maybe about a week or two ago. I'd be like, we'll see. But over the last 10 games, the Cubs pitching has really kicked it up. I think the entire staff right now has got an ERA of 1.67 over the last 10 games. Oh, my gosh. This pitching has completely turned it around. And it was great to see the offense kick in because we saw some really solid pitching and through that the tail end of their road series with the Pirates and the Tigers. Just no run scoring really happening. And then all of a sudden this weekend and the last game against the Tigers kind of turned things around. Daniel Murphy's been a huge piece. He's got at least a hit in all 5 of his games so far. He's got 2 hits in 4 of those games. He's got a couple home runs. He's been every bit a part of this offense right now, which is huge.
Yeah, and interestingly enough, I went to Baseball Reference yesterday and was just looking at some stuff, and I noticed that among the Cubs' starting pitchers, the WAR leader, the wins above replacement leader, according to BREF, for the Cubs, is a tie between John Lester and Cole Hamels.
Honestly, that doesn't surprise me. I mean, particularly Cole Hamels, he's been essentially the Cubs' savior this year. What a good pickup. I mean, how crazy is it that, you know, the Dodgers went and got Manny Machado and, you know, gave up what they did for him, and he's, you know, the Dodgers are not looking like potentially a playoff team at this point. They look like they could be falling off in their division and potentially out of the wild card. But the Cubs had Daniel Murphy and Cole Hamels, and they're going on this incredible tear right now. It's crazy. You know, who would have thought like a guy like David Bode would be more important than Manny Machado for a team right now?
So today the Cubs start with the Mets. They're 12-7 over their last 19 games. They haven't lost a series since August 2nd through 5th. Noah Syndergaard will start tonight against John Lester. Jacob DeGrom tomorrow against Cole Hamels. Syndergaard hasn't started against the Cubs since 2016, and in 3 career appearances in the regular season against the Cubs, he has a 2.00 ERA with 22 strikeouts and 18 innings. One of Lester's best starts of 2018 was against the Mets in June. He went 7 shutout innings with 7 strikeouts. And since his horrible start a few weeks ago against the Nationals, Lester has allowed just 1 earned run over 11 and two-thirds innings in his last 2 starts. So two good pitching matchups, at least with, you know, pitchers with track records, and you know, really could be very exciting. But it's hard to get too much of a read on the next 2 days. If the Cubs go 0-2 in these two games and get shut out both times, won't be all that surprising given how inconsistent their offense has been, but B, I won't really take it as much meaning much of anything.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. I mean, these are two really good pitchers. It'll be a good litmus test to see how efficient this offense actually is. I think it'll tell us more so, you know, maybe how good this offense is as opposed to maybe how bad the Reds pitching was this weekend. Wasn't fantastic, definitely. But I'm, like you said, I'm not going to look at these two starts and be like, oh, wow, this team's terrible. These are two really, really good pitchers, clearly, in Syndergaard and DeGrom, who they'll see tomorrow. So, you know, it'll be solid to see how this offense performs. And, you know, I'll have to look at these at bats and see how things go. Even if the Cubs don't score many runs, I'm not going to be like, well, season's over, pack it up, you know?
Right. Yeah. This is Syndergaard and DeGrom, and the two of the best pitchers in the game. The third game is Jason Vargas, who has been terrible for the Mets, but he'll be going up against Alec Mills, who we talked about a moment ago, who's getting another start. Mills, 5 2/3 innings, 3 hits allowed, 1 earned run, 1 walk, 8 strikeouts on 84 pitches against the Reds. Joe Maddon said he's going to stick around for at least one more turn in the rotation, and that'll take us into September before he would even pitch again. So it sounds like Mills is here for the rest of the season.
Which I'm okay with. He was having an okay season with Iowa. He's been a guy that they acquired him around the same time they got Eddie Butler last year, I think. And both those guys I was intrigued by. Butler really didn't show much. And from what it sounds like a lot of people in the clubhouse didn't really like him. So,
There are plenty of stories about that I can't share.
Yeah.
At least not on this podcast. But yes, you are right.
There's definitely a little bit of tension, putting it mildly, between Butler and the clubhouse. But Alec Mills is a guy I always kind of wanted to see what he looked like. And, I mean, that start that he had earlier this week was great. So good for him. He deserves to stick around. Hopefully he can maybe save some innings for guys like John Lester and, you know, even guy Kyle Hendricks or whatnot. If Mills can be important and the Cubs can continue this hot streak, I mean, they're – getting some distance right now and they're in the standings a little bit. So who knows, but yeah, Mills definitely deserves another start at the very least.
Yeah. I'm okay with him getting another start. I'm also kind of on the edge of this guy hasn't been impressive at AAA. He doesn't have outstanding velocity. He doesn't have outstanding stuff. He has, you know, basically just a couple decent pitches. It was really moving more than like his two-seam fastball, his four-seam fastball, whatever he was throwing, was really moving quite a bit in that start. And that's, I don't know, from the people I talked to who had seen him at AAA, that's not necessarily what you could expect to get from him every time. So I also would have been totally okay with like, hey, let's accept the fact that we started Alec Mills for a game and got a really good performance out of it and then, you know, a walk-off victory. I would be okay with just like leaving well enough, leaving it be, you know, as it is. But if they want to give him one more start, I guess it's not like the end of the world.
Yeah, it's kind of how I feel. See if he can prove it again. Because like you said, his AAA stats are very underwhelming. I was nervous, to be honest, when they put him out there. I wanted to see what he looked like. I was just like, would have loved to have seen him 2 months ago as opposed to right now. But what can you do? We'll see what happens. I'm hesitantly optimistic. You know, it's the Mets who have been hot, but, you know, this entire season haven't been fantastic. So we'll have to see what happens. I'm cautiously optimistic, and we'll leave it at that.
Well, the better news is that Mike Montgomery is set to come off the DL and start Thursday in Atlanta, or at least it looks like. And then they'll go to Philadelphia for a 3-game set that, you know, just following the rotation in your mind would be Quintana, Hendricks, Lester. And then they have a 3-game set in Milwaukee that would start with Hamels and then, you know, the Alec Mills spot. But maybe at that point they, you know, have somebody else, or maybe they, you know, decide something else with the rotation.
Tyler Chatwood. Let's throw him in there against the Brewers. Just kidding. I'm interested to see how September call-ups go, because the Cubs aren't necessarily in a position where they can run out some of these starters like Alec Mills and Dwayne Underwood on a consistent basis and give guys, you know, 6 or 7 days rest if they need to sometimes. But, you know, if they keep playing the way they are and they do get themselves some distance, the Brewers haven't been fantastic. The Cardinals are still hot, but Matt Carpenter, as you pointed out, probably isn't eating the right salsa anymore. His OPS is like 500 something right now. So they're starting to taper off a little bit. Maybe the Cubs can kind of pick up and steal a couple more games in the division. And now suddenly it's a 7 or 8 game lead. Who knows? But
yeah. That, what you brought up is a little bit of egg on my face, because I did mention that over his last 11 games, Carpenter had been slumping, but he hit 4 doubles yesterday.
He must have been watching your Twitter or something. Never mind. Matt Carpenter's still very good.
Well, and to give you a little bit of a peek behind the curtain of how I use my social media, later in the day, I noticed that people had, I was getting like a ton of responses to it and a ton of retweets after Carpenter really went off against, you know, the Rockies in Colorado in a situation when the Cardinals scored 12 runs. So obviously they were, as a team, they were teeing off on Rockies pitching. But I have a setting on my Twitter where if you don't follow me, I don't see your notifications, because I have no time for people who don't follow me just coming like to yell at me on Twitter about stuff, because that happens when you're a writer. And so I didn't see, like, there were like 28 people who commented on that tweet, and I just didn't read any of it.
That's probably honestly for the better.
Oh yeah.
You're probably saner and in a better mood because of it, because okay. I have a situation and Twitter can be just the scum of the earth sometimes, but it still does not hold a candle to Facebook comments. I swear to God, people get on there and just like forget what morals are. It's incredible, but we don't have to get into terrible comments on social media.
Right. Yeah. And I figured all this out a while back because I wrote for a publication that had a lot of stuff that goes on Yahoo. And, you know, on any given day, I might have 300,000, 400,000 page views. And, you know, people just chase you down on social media to yell at you over the dumbest things. And it's like, okay, you know, like I have no time for this. I don't want to see that in my notifications, because I just don't care about your opinion on this topic, or why you want to call me a scumbag or whatever, or fake news. You know, that's just like, be better human beings than that.
Oh my gosh. Do you know who Jam Fam is, right?
Oh yeah, we all know who that is, I'm pretty sure. Anyone who listens to this who's on Twitter knows who that is.
He decided to one time impersonate me on Twitter and just like really like for like 17 hours was just tweeting the random baseball rumors. I was just like, oh my God. Like funny. Like you're putting something that is so not funny. I don't know, but I tried to get verified on Twitter from it. It didn't work, but I figured for a little bit it might. So
Someday I'll be popular enough to have a fake account as me tweeting as me. Who knows?
It was very meta.
All right, let's finish on that. We'll go to segment 2 and we'll talk a little bit about Chris Bryant, a few injury updates, and some interesting pitching prospects. So Chris Bryant took batting practice this weekend, live batting practice, as they call it, off Drew Smyly. He's got a new kind of adjustment to his swing for his shoulder. He's swinging two-handed, so he doesn't have the, you know, the straight one-handed swing like he does when he follows through. Joe Maddon talked about, you know, in practice he wants him swinging two-handed. In actual game situations, if the, you know, top hand comes off on the follow through, that's not like the biggest deal in the world. They don't care. They just want him to be comfortable. So Bryant says that he's hitting the ball harder and farther with his two-handed swing. That remains to be seen whether it translates to games, but he is rehabbing with the Iowa Cubs beginning today. So It's fair to say that depending on how this goes, he might be back as early as like Thursday.
Yeah, that's honestly realistic at this point. Going back to Chris Bryant's swing, I mean, like logistically wise, it would make more sense he's hitting the ball further if he's keeping his hand on the bat. because that would usually imply that he's probably making contact longer or having a more sturdy control through the zone. That being said, his one-handed finishes on some of these home runs are so cool, and I'm going to be bummed if those are gone. But they'll still exist in the MLB The Show, and that's all that matters to me, I guess. But hopefully he can get back soon. I know I'm going to probably be watching the games in Omaha these next couple days. So we'll be able to get a good look at that. So hopefully it sounds like NBC Sports is going to try and find a feed. So you might be able to watch that. I know I will. So, yeah, who knows? If everything looks okay, I mean, like you said, Brian could be back this week. Same with Tyler Chatwood. He's probably one of rosters expand type of guy, but who knows? But I know he's with the Omaha today. So everything goes the way it should with Chris Bryant. Everything translates to the way they're talking about it, because who knows, really? Chris Bryant can be back in the next week. So that's very encouraging news.
Yes. And you mentioned Tyler Chatwood. He's rehabbing with the Iowa Cubs today. I would assume that they would, at least give him two more starts, or not two, two including today, before they would bring him back up, just because, you know, this is a guy that you're not making room on your roster until after September 1st, I would hope.
Yeah, I think that's probably safe to assume Chatwood isn't up till sometime after Saturday, just when the rosters expand, just because, I mean, it's been ugly. We don't have to talk about it. Everyone's seen it and knows it, but...
Yeah, well, when I laid out earlier that, you know, they have this other turn through the rotation, and then does Alec Mills get a second start or a third start essentially, but another start after this one? And you said Tyler Chatwood jokingly. I mean, maybe. I mean, if they could theoretically put him out there. I mean, it'd be horrible and a really terrible decision in my opinion. But would it really shock you if he had two like decent rehab starts that they would, you know, decide, hey, we're going to throw him in the rotation again because we need a starter, and maybe Alec Mills was really terrible against the Mets?
I mean, no. The Cubs have a lot of confidence in Chatwood, surprisingly, even with all his struggles. At first, I thought it was really just because, like, they invested a good amount of money in him and just were like, well, we've got to see we've got to see the investment through type of thing. But I feel like they actually just like the guy, and they think he can break out of it. And I'm very skeptical of it at this point, just because it's just one of those situations where, like, you know, once you go so far into the season, that's kind of who you are that year. You know, you might have a few moments here and there, but this is something that's going to take an off season to correct and get back to where you were and get the confidence back and do all these things. It's not going to just snap and happen in a start, because it's been 18 starts essentially of just pretty bad non-locating baseball.
Yeah, for Chatwood, I think obviously he wants to get back to a point where he feels like he can contribute, because I know that will probably help him with his confidence going into the offseason. So I understand all of it, but yeah, I lean more towards what you're saying. I feel like at this point they just have to say, look, you're going to come back up when rosters expand. We're going to leave you in the bullpen. You're not going to start the rest of the year. You're just going to come in and get a few innings here and there. Maybe you'll piggyback off somebody. But that's the most I could see them doing. It just seems hard to imagine him. Imagine anything that could possibly happen the next two games for him, assuming he hits two rehab starts, that would have them say, you know what? Yeah, let's have him start in Milwaukee in a couple weeks.
Yeah, that's the other thing you're going up against, like, essentially the team that's been on your coattails all year and at one point leading the division early in the season. So, I mean, It's tough to put him in a situation where you really need to take two or three from a team and expect him to be able to execute. Maybe if it's a couple innings, maybe you can use him as a bridge guy to get to your bullpen. I'm okay with that. But even in his, like, he came in the ninth in a blowout win for the Cubs a couple weeks ago or before he got hurt. And even that was a nightmare. I was like, oh my God, the Cubs have like a 7-run lead and Tyler Chatwood's going to give him 4 right here. You know, like, yeah. It's just, it's hard to have confidence in a guy that walks more than he strikes out. It's just, you know, that's just redonkulous that someone like that is in the MLB and getting paid his money and doing this stuff, and the Cubs keep trotting him out. So,
yeah, yesterday would have been a really good situation for him had he been on the roster. You know, the Hendricks 7 shutout innings are up 9-0. Here comes Tyler Chatwood. He's going to allow 4 runs over the last 2 innings, and you're still going to win 9-4. That would have been fine.
Exactly. Yeah, that was an exact moment he should have come in here. So, but instead we want Randy Rosario.
Yeah. So Brandon Morrow, there's another update. He threw a 25 pitch bullpen session on Saturday. He is still experiencing soreness. However, it's not in his muscles, he says. These words may be triggering for Cub fans at this point, but he has a stress reaction in his bone. He's calling it a bone bruise. It's still sore. He said he's planning to return as soon as September, and basically said if it doesn't get any worse than it is, he's fine to pitch through it because it's not muscular, it's not in tendons, it's basically just a bone bruise and it hurts. But he said probably won't be able to go back to back or three out of four really right away or anytime soon. I would guess maybe once or twice before the playoffs, but that's it.
Oh man, and that just like there's multiple levels of disappointment there for Cubs fans with, you know, clearly Darvish going down with something very similar for the entire season. Morrow apparently is going to pitch through the pain, but can't be utilized as a normal closer. It seems like if that's the case, if Morrow really can't go back to back or he can't go, more than just an inning, you almost have to consider just using him as a setup guy maybe and just hope that Pedro Strop can be the closer. I'm not necessarily sure that, but I mean, that's I'm more confident in Pedro Strop executing at this point than I am in Morrow, especially if he's going to be in pain.
Yeah, I would probably suggest until the season's over, if he's, until he gets back where he's right, I would suggest leaving Strop in the closing position. Just bring him in the ninth and then use Morrow as, obviously they're going to have a ton of arms in the bullpen once September starts. We don't even have to go over the list of arms that they'll have available, but they'll legitimately have on any given day maybe 15, 16 guys in the bullpen who could come into a game. So with Morrow, I would just schedule his appearances, okay, so you're going to pitch tomorrow and then we're going to give you 2 days off and then you're going to pitch the next day. I mean, just put him on a schedule because you have enough setup guys at this point that you can trust because you've been doing it without him for so long. So just schedule his appearances until the end of the year and then kind of readjust and see where you are. If Pedro Strop is still getting the job done, which he by and large has, then maybe you go into the postseason with Morrow as one of your setup guys that you can use wherever. You have Cishek, a guy who could come in and do an inning and a third, two innings, that kind of thing. And then you have Strop, who basically just comes in the ninth. Or, depending on how it works out, maybe you bring in Strop for the ninth, and if you haven't used Morrow, you have Morrow as kind of your contingency.
Yeah, I like that plan. I like the idea of scheduling his starts, letting him know when he's going to be there, and hopefully maybe he can start prepping himself more, get himself into that game ready mode, and we'll see what happens. I mean, this is also a guy we're talking about that hasn't actually thrown at a game since June. Maybe is that the last time he pitched sometime around there?
It was shortly after the All-Star break, so late July.
Okay, so
a little over a month, I think he's been out.
Okay, so I mean, this is a guy that hasn't been in a game situation. So I mean, letting him know ahead of time might help him prep to get into that type of mindset, especially if he's not going to go into a closing situation. He doesn't seem like the guy that feeds off the adrenaline of the moment, but I'm sure going into it X amount of times this season, it's a different approach. So you got to let him kind of get into it a bit more. So I hate high maintenance relievers. Unfortunately, they pretty much all are, but I hate having to kind of cater to a guy that you should be leaning on more so than, finding him the moments to be successful. But if that's what they have to do to make Morrow successful, that's fine. It'll be better for the long run.
Yeah. A few more updates. Brian Dunsing is currently rehabbing with the Iowa Cubs in 2 2/3 innings in the minors since he started rehabbing. 4 hits, 3 earned runs, no strikeouts. So, don't get too excited about Brian Dunsing. And then also Drew Smyly, he threw that live BP for Bryant. I think the Cubs were probably kind of hoping, and maybe he was hoping, that he'd be on a rehab stint by now so that he could be also ready for September 1st. It looks like he probably won't be added to the roster when they expand September 1st. It might be a little bit after that, if at all.
Yeah. That's unfortunate because I think adding a guy like Drew Smyly, it was such a good underrated move. And honestly, anything that he added to this season was the cherry on top because it got him so cheap. But yeah, it seemed like the way they were talking about it for a little bit, it really did feel like Smyly was going to be a part of this team, maybe at this point or right at September call. But if he's not there, I mean, clearly the plan is he is contending for a rotation spot next year, which I'm excited about. He's a talented guy.
Yeah, in theory, he is. So speaking of pitching, we just talked about how they're going to have so many guys in the bullpen. Just off the top of my head, you could list out Corey Mazzoni, Anthony Bass, Justin Hancock, maybe Smiley, maybe Dunsing. Morrow is going to be coming back. Luke Farrell's probably going to be there. Dwayne Underwood, Alec Mills, if he's not in the rotation, Tyler Chatwood. So you have just a flurry of these guys that you're bringing up, a lot of which are guys that, you know, maybe you don't trust as, you know, they're going to come in the eighth inning and give you, you know, a shutdown eighth in a 2-1 game. But these are guys who can really pick up the slack and let guys like Steve Cishek rest. So I wanted to talk a little bit more about the rest of the pitching that the Cubs have in the minors. This is something that has been a point of contention for a few years where they haven't had depth like they have on the 40-man that we've talked about, which is going to be very important for them with the, you know, 23 games in a row and then, you know, trying to close out this division in September. But they also have pitching prospects to the point where I think it's fair to say they have more depth and better pitching prospects than they have positionally right now.
Yeah, honestly, and we were talking about this before the show started. That's honestly, that's how I feel right now, too. You just look at the guys they have to call up for bats at the moment, and, you know, there's no one really that stands out. There's a lot of guys that probably should have been better. Chesney Young's a guy I thought would have been on the roster at this point maybe a year ago, but he hasn't really panned out. But you look at all the pitching options, while they're not necessarily elite guys that are going to come and jump into your rotation, they're definitely people that can make an impact in September for sure.
Yeah, and when I talk about pitching prospects, I think they have a lot of depth of guys who are maybe at least one, maybe two or three years away. One guy who just this weekend got called up from AA to AAA, his name is Duncan Robinson, 24 years old. I think he was a ninth round pick. He threw 6 shutout innings for the Iowa Cubs this weekend. On the season, he has a 3.16 ERA in 136 and two-thirds innings. 7.5 K per nine, which is decent, but 1.5 walks per nine. In 283 total innings in his minor league career, he has a 2.80 ERA. He's 6'6", low 90s fastball, a big 12-6 curveball that I've seen a person I trust describe it as a plus pitch. So this is a guy who I think could be taking a rotation spot next year if there were one available. Obviously, they've got a packed rotation, but, you know, injuries, that's a guy who could be ready in 2019 to come up and take a start for you. Just looking at the legitimate pitching prospects who are having decent or good seasons in the minors, Matt Swarmer has a 3.01 ERA, 122 and two-thirds innings between high A, Myrtle Beach, and double A, 9.5 strikeout per nine, 1.5 walks per nine. That's a great season. Keegan Thompson, Michael Rucker, Trevor Clifton, Tom Hatch, Corey Abbott, Alex Lang, Eric Leal, Tyson Miller, and Justin Steele, all starting pitching prospects who are having nice years at various levels in the minors. So yeah, this is a good thing. I think, you know, Theo Epstein talked earlier this year when I was in St. Louis, he mentioned that when you talk about, you know, the way the people view the farm system, it's often through the lens of you know, previous rankings, which don't update, you know, as the season goes along generally. So the pitching side is very good right now, and where the Cubs rank in the overall standings in like farm systems, I feel like is going to be rising over the next few months.
Yeah, no, they just have, like you said, a collection, having that much, you know, I guess maybe not MLB ready, but pitching that can contribute if necessary is huge. That's something the Cubs have never really had, at least not for a while. I just see all these pitching prospects and it just bums me out a little bit, just because I think, like, man, how much better would these pitching prospects look if we had Dylan Cease still in the minors? But, you know, of course, then we wouldn't have Jose Quintana, and we'd probably be rolling out with like Alec Mills as an everyday starter, as opposed to a guy that comes up, you know, at the end of the year and helps win a game or two. So, but yeah, I mean, it's a definite culture change, that's for sure. And it, like you said, Epstein is 100% right. A lot of these, like Baseball America, MLB Pipeline, this stuff doesn't get updated maybe twice a year before, like during season. So they aren't up to date, but it would be crazy if the Cubs don't see themselves trending upward on the ranking list with how many pitching arms they really do have.
Yeah, I saw, I think it might have been Jonathan Mayo's list that he put out recently where there was an update. I think he had the Cubs as like the 17th best farm system, or maybe it was 14th or 15th, something like that. It was basically right in the middle. And he also talked about how they had some pitching prospects. So yeah, this is a farm system that's rising again. And it just seems like, yeah, the Cubs have really restocked with the pitching in a way that they hadn't. They had kind of failed to do the first few seasons. Even a guy like Trevor Clifton, who's been around, who's in AAA, having an okay season, not a real prospect in the way that I think a lot of people think of prospects.
Right.
Not going to be like a top of the rotation starter, but it feels like right now they have just a list of guys 24 or 22 to 24 who could come up at any point in the next few years and take a start for you or be a number four, number five type guy for a career.
Definitely. They definitely do it. You mentioned a lot of names that have been in the Cubs rotation or Cubs, I guess, minors for a little bit. It's nice to see them getting close to a little point where they might actually contribute, which seems to be very not the norm for the Cubs these last couple of years. We've heard about pitching and they either don't come up or they turn into Sean Gallagher's or whatever it may be. So yep. It's nice to see these guys getting close to where they can actually contribute on the major league level.
All right, let's finish there. We'll go to the final segment where we have some standings stuff to talk about, and then we also have a correction from a previous podcast. So the bad news, both the Cardinals and the Brewers won their series over the weekend. On Sunday, the Cardinals jumped all over the Rockies. As I said before, 12-3 they won. The Brewers beat the Pirates 7-4. Now they go on the road to face the Reds. I believe the Cardinals are at home to face the Pirates. So both those teams off today, though. The Cubs could gain another half ground in the standings with a win. If they do, they'll be up 4.5 games on the Cardinals, which matches their largest divisional lead of the season. And as of now, the Cubs are a season high 23 games over 500 and on pace for 95 wins. So all good stuff.
Yeah, I did not hear a bad thing in all of that. So that's fantastic. It's interesting to see the Cubs have a 4.5 game lead over the Cardinals and Brewers. Let's hope that can continue to keep going on. The Cardinals are still playing relatively hot. The Brewers are sticking around. They're not going to be. I can't see either team falling further than four games at this point. So I think it's going to be a knockdown dragout fight. But maybe if the Cubs can stay hot and these two teams cool off, maybe we can sneak another game or two in that. And that would probably give the Cubs a lot more flexibility in who they run out there for pitchers and who they can try in the lineup and, you know, do things that Joe Maddon likes to do. So let's hope that that can happen.
Yeah. Early in the season, I predicted the Cardinals would be like an 84 to 88 win team. At this point, I've upped that because I wasn't expecting that they'd get rid of Mike Matheny and turn over a lot of their roster and then decide to actually play good baseball. So right now, I would think that they're maybe a 90 to 92 win team if they keep winning at this pace. So yeah, that's not out of the realm of possibility. So yeah, if the Cubs win 95 games, that would still be good enough to win the division, but that would be keeping it pretty close right to the very end.
Yeah, I saw a stat on Twitter a couple days ago. Let me pull it up here really quick, see if I can find it, where it was like what the Cubs, like if they were their records, they had to go to reach wins here. It looks like, yeah, it was Matt Clapp that tweeted it. To get to 87 wins, they'd have to go 12-22. To get to 94 wins, they have to go 19-15. Anything above that, they pretty much have to win out every series. If they were to do that, they'd probably get to 100 wins at 25-9. But, I mean, the Cubs really, honestly, as long as they're able to bite off the Cardinals and Brewers for a little bit, they really just have to go a couple games over 500 to probably lock this division up at this point, because we are, you know, pretty much down to a month of baseball left, if even. So they're in a good spot. It didn't feel like they were a week or so ago, but you know, the Brewers kind of playing subpar baseball and the Cardinals being so far back to begin with on this hot streak, it helped the Cubs kind of keep them maybe at arm's length, but you know, kind of in where they're still a little bit in the driver's seat. And at this point right now, barring some type of catastrophic failure with the Cubs here, they should be able to hold on to this division playing the type of baseball they are right now.
Right. You know, with the offense breaking out a little bit more lately, with Chris Bryant coming back, Morrow coming back, the September roster is expanding. Obviously the other teams get their rosters expanding as well, but the Cubs are in this unique position that we've talked about before, where they have such a amount of depth on their 40-man roster with the pitching, especially, where all these games in a row, you really can give guys just full days off or a couple days at a time where you could say, hey, Steve Cishek, you know, great job for us all season. We're going to give you 3 days off in a row. That's a thing that you could really survive with the kind of depth that you have. So you're right. They are in a very good position for that reason.
Yeah, and even guys like Ben Zobrist, who played, I think he's played like 5 games in a row prior to yesterday, getting him a couple of breaks now. Because, I mean, you do have guys like Murphy and Bodie, and when Brian comes back, you'll be able to rest him a little bit more and maybe not have to trot him out as much. He's been such a key piece of this offense, it's hard to keep him out of the lineup, but at least give him a day off, maybe once a week or twice a week. You can do that if the Cubs stay in this position.
Yeah. So standings as of right now, the Cubs are 76-53. Cardinals 73-58. That's 4 games back. Milwaukee's 73-59, a half game further back of the Cardinals. Pittsburgh 64-67, 13 back. The Reds 56-75, now 21 games back. We have a correction. I talked on Friday about trade deadline moves and midseason moves. I referred to the 1984 Rick Sutcliffe deal as not having been a trade deadline deal because it happened in like the second week of June. But Matt Trueblood, who writes for Baseball Prospectus, emailed to kindly correct me on that. That was when the trade deadline was June 15th, way back when. So okay. It was a deadline deal. However, it was a to the point that I was talking about, it was a much earlier in the season type of deal than you know, where Cole Hamels was, for example.
Of course, Matt would know that. Thanks, Matt, for correcting us.
Yeah, so that's all I've got for today. Cubs play tonight. I think that's a 7:05 start. A great pitching matchup, Lester against Syndergaard. Lester's been better lately. Syndergaard hasn't been exactly on his game the last few games out. So we'll see. You know, nothing would surprise me tonight. Either a Cubs big win or a shutout with Syndergaard on the mound. Either of those seem very probable.
Yeah, I would say that it's about 50-50 shot that the Cubs either just take this game by 4 or 5 runs or they struggle to score more than 2-3 runs. So we'll have to see.
Who knows? Maybe Syndergaard pitches well, but they get him to work up that pitch count. They get him out after like 6 innings and then they get into the Mets bullpen, which that would be really good. Or maybe they knock around Syndergaard and they get into the bullpen early. That would be really good news for the rest of the series.
Yeah, I mean, the Cubs do like hitting fastballs, and Syndergaard throws a lot of them. So, unfortunately, they're triple digits, but, you know, fastball's a fastball, right?
Did you see what happened to the Mets yesterday?
I did not know what happened.
I don't remember who started for them. I think it was Steven Matz, went 7 innings, allowed 1 run, or 1 earned run, 1 run total. I think it was a 1-0 game going into the top of the eighth.
That's right. The Nationals, like, crushed him with like 10 runs in an inning or something like that.
They lost 15-0.
Yeah.
When Steven Matz went 7 innings, 1 run.
Well, if that's not a precursor, I don't know what is. Clearly the bullpen not good in New York. So
no. Yeah. So that's going to be our theme of the next 3 days. Get into the bullpen, make them work the pitch count up. And if you get into the bullpen, you can win.